and welcome to Garden Planet, another half hour of garden goss with your hosts, Selena and
Karen.
Hey Karen, how's it going?
Oh, good thanks Selena, and yourself?
Good. This week, it looks like the moon is still in its first quarter and it's getting fuller.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the plants are growing and they, yeah, time to turn your attention to all the leaf growth and the fruits and the flowers. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's all good this week.
Right, sounds exciting. An exciting phase.
Yeah.
Yes.
I heard, Karen, that you went to a seed-saving workshop.
You heard correct, Selena. Yes, in the weekend I went to a seed-saving workshop covered by Judy Keats. She is a renowned community garden educator. She works with organic systems and regenerative agriculture, and she's a permaculturist.
Oh, wow, that's cool, because I'm one too.
Oh, awesome.
Yay.
Yay.
So what's important about saving seeds, Karen? Why should we save seeds?
Okay, well, according to Judy, saving your own seed allows you to preserve a plant variety that is adapted to the conditions of your own backyard. When you discover a variety that performs well, it makes common sense to grow that variety again. So saving your own seed will save you money. It gives you something to share and trade with your friends, and it will provide you with a reliable and enjoyable food source.
Speaking of sharing with your friends, look what I've got, Karen.
Oh my goodness, what have you got there in that container, Selena?
Well, to share with you, yeah, this fluffy looking thing is from the swan plant.
I was guessing so. It looks like it's exploded.
Yeah. So the fruit
literally
of the swan plant, it looks like a, I don't know, does it look like a swan to you?
I have no idea why they call it that. No, it looks like a beshevelled mess of cotton wool.
Oh, well,
with a few seeds,
the seeds
attached.
The seeds are attached to the fluffy,
yeah,
like down like the swan's feathers, I guess.
Oh,
but
of course.
Apparently, the swan plant, its Latin name is Asclepia.
Oh,
like from the Greek god of healing.
Okay,
and Asclepia physocarpa, and physocarpa means bladder fruit. So, does this look like a bladder to you?
I've never actually seen a bladder in real life. Mm. I haven't really studied them that closely.
Okay.
But I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that swan plant in my garden, swan plants are the plants that attract the monarch butterflies, your listeners out there. And, yeah, I've got quite a few of them growing and they've all gone to seed, putting out these fluffy things, and they're all kind of being blown by the wind all over my garden.
Yes, they start off in a pod. And have yours actually just kind of popped open on their own,
yeah,
or is that you're doing there?
No, they just, when they dry out in the sun, they just pop open and then spread all their seeds.
Spread their love.
Yeah, like, I guess like spiders, you know, when they have babies and they just,
yeah. And they're actually quite good at self-seeding as well, I find.
Yeah.
Mine are just kind of sprouting up, yeah,
in the cracks
randomly.
In the
yeah. They're quite a robust plant, the old swan plant.
I heard another name for swan plant is milkweed.
Yes.
So it's sort of weedy, but it's a good weed.
Yeah, and I think that's to do with the white sap on the inside of it, I think.
Yeah, the sticky sap from it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of my seeds I got here. So you can have some.
I'm all about seed saving this week. So, you know, the more the merrier. Why not? And if I don't use it, someone will.
Yes.
Who doesn't want a swan plant?
Just email us at gardenplanet.fm.
Right.
At gmail.com if you'd like to. If you don't have any swan plants and you would like some swan plant seeds, we can
get
you some.
Right. And Judy was saying, you know, seed training is going to be a fair dinkin' thing of the future.
We can send you some in the mail.
They're
easy to post.
With the way the world is going in terms of global changes, and you need good plants to survive.
Yeah.
And, yeah, she firmly believes that it's going to be the new currency one day. You know, if you've got a strong seed to share,
So instead of money, it's seeds.
Interesting. Yeah, and that's what they did in the medieval days. That would be really valuable trading. I don't know, I was going to say tool, but yeah.
Talking of trade, I was watching this biodynamic documentary talking about farmers in India and how they were originally farming by chemical agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this green revolution in the 60s and they all got into getting fertilizers and seeds from a big corporation whose name is Monsanto.
Oh, yes.
And they all had to buy their seed from there and their seeds were no good. They grew, but they couldn't reproduce.
Well, that's right, and that brings me to my next point, Selena, with regards, I think this is where you were going, with hybrids and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Judy Keats, not a fan. one of the main points she said. She was saying seed selections available from seed companies such as Monsanto. Am I saying that correctly?
Monsanto.
Include many plant varieties that have been bred to look good or to hold their shape for transportation. So characteristics not necessary for the home gardener. So, they've been saying things like taste and nutrition have been sacrificed for more like uniform appearance.
Oh, okay.
And hybrids will not grow true to type when saved as well, she said. So it's not often you'll get one.
So hybrids are two different plants crossing over and producing a combination of the two, but when that plant mates with another one, it can't come true to type, is that?
I don't know exactly the science behind it. She didn't get into it and I haven't really bothered investigating too much. But that's the idea. So it's all, I wouldn't say genetic engineering there, but I don't know enough about seed genetic engineering. I think that could come into it. Do you know much about that?
Modifying genetics? I know that you can breed plants to get cultivars that are different.
Okay.
But always the original plant will have all the genetic material in its seed.
Right.
And always go back to the original because that's how you get the variety.
Yeah.
I
think all this meddling that we're doing in the labs it's sometimes useful, but it seems to me for the most part problematic the way we're going with a lot of our cropping issues. Sometimes the easiest way isn't always the best, right?
No.
Yeah.
I think taking shortcuts too can cause a lot of problems later on.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And so that's where Judy got into heirloom seeds. Which are open pollinated, which means they're pollinated by bees or wind, not self-pollinating. So she said that is the best seed to grow. She recommends those.
Okay.
Those.
Swan plants, wind pollination.
Yes. Travels through. And she said the heirloom seeds remain true to their origins, will be more disease tolerant and have greater nutritional value than the newly bred varieties. So, that's that on the heirloom seeds.
Mm-hmm. I've got some other seeds here, Karen. So these sweet pea seeds.
Yeah.
They've been saved, not from my own sweet peas, but there's a guy called Dr. Keith Hammett who especially breeds sweet peas, dahlias, clivias, all these flowers.
Yeah.
And he gets all these different varieties from the one original.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're hybrids, but it takes a long time to breed a seed.
Yeah. And some will, like, I think they call it cross-pollinate.
Yeah.
Naturally anyway.
Yeah.
Judy actually touched on this topic as well. With regard to the cucurbitae family, Now, I hope I'm saying that right. I'm reading it off her notes that she gave me.
The melon family?
Yeah. This is the family of pumpkin, cucumber and courgettes. I would say melons would be in that family too. This family is, word of warning, does cross-pollinate quite readily. So at their community garden, it's at the Kaipātiki Centre of Learning. I believe it's called that. It's in Birkdale. And there's a community garden there. She said they had major issues with pumpkins cross-pollinating with courgettes.
Oh.
Sounds amazing if you love pumpkin and love courgette, but this particular breed was inedible,
okay.
She said.
Like a pumpkin.
She said, yeah, it was really exciting, but when they chopped it up and, you know, ate it, it was just tasteless and full of seeds. So
okay.
So she said, so with these particular this family, it's best just to grow one variety per season.
Okay.
And then, you know, mix it up the next season with another. So just be or spread them at like far ends of the garden. And also be vigilant when it comes to what your neighbours are growing as well. Because it does, the whole thing can get quite, gardening is a complex world,
plants,
I'm telling you right
segregation.
Now.
Segregation.
No wonder people don't do it. Except as...
I do.
I know. I'm one out of about,
the rare.
Yeah, I am slowly but surely, you know, encouraging all my people to get into it,
Yeah, to spread that garden gospel, Karen.
Yeah, that's right. Once you get the taste, right?
Yeah.
Embrace the challenge. So that's what she had to say about that. Did you want to know anything about what Judy had to say about the process of seed saving and collecting?
Yeah, I've done a bit of seed saving myself, as you see.
I can see by your collection on the table, for sure.
So I'll just share what I know. You, if it's fruit, you eat the fruit, of course, but you save the seeds and then you can dry them, and usually that will preserve them for the next time you want to grow them, right?
Well, this is what Judy said about that.
Okay.
I don't know if you're doing the same thing with regards things with lots of seeds, like tomatoes and your fruits that have got lots of seeds in the middle. She said wait till they're the ripest that they can possibly be. So leave them on the vine or the tree for as long as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and then you're going to take them off. But when it comes to things like, let's take a tomato, you need to actually ferment them, she said. She said 2 to 3 days. I did some research and they said 2 weeks. So I'm going to say maybe around a week.
Okay.
So you just take, say, a tomato, cut it in half and pop it in a glass of water.
Yeah.
And then that basically dissolves all the flesh around the seeds away.
Yeah.
Is that I would have just thought.
And then you sieve it to get all the
gunk off.
But tomatoes are quite mushy. But I know that if you just chuck a tomato in the ground which is full of seeds that are ripe already, it'll start growing from that.
Yeah, fermenting or not.
Yeah,
isn't it amazing? So I guess this is just a surefire way for her of making sure that you do get good seed.
Yeah.
She's very thorough in her practice. So, that's the hardcore way of doing it. Things like, say, pumpkins and other big seeds that don't have much flesh around them, you don't need to ferment it.
No.
You can just,
With these sweet peas, if anyone's grown sweet peas, you do leave them on the vine to dry out, and then it just naturally, they just spread their seeds. So sometimes you don't even need to collect them. They die down, then you pull the vine down for mulch, and then next season they'll come up again.
Yeah.
So they sort of self-seed.
That's right. So she said, and if you do have a group of gardeners, like say at a community garden like where she's at, and you found a pod that you think, yep, there's some great seed on that, it's been a great fruit, therefore great seed, therefore more great fruit.
Yeah.
She said might be an idea just to mark it, so you can do that just by writing on it or, put a ribbon on it or something like that. Just
good idea. What is the seed? The mystery seed.
Yeah.
So what will it be?
Yeah, so the seeds can get as full as they possibly can.
Oh, great.
And, as much nutrients in them as they can, and then you pluck them at the very last minute. Yeah.
Mm. I had sunflower here, Karen, not my actual one, but this is from a seed packet. But they have been growing in our garden, in our community garden.
And I have seen those.
They are now going to seed. So I know you just cut the flower heads off and put them in a paper bag.
Yeah.
And they will dry and fall into the bag.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Judy just had, honestly, she had like paper bags covering this whole table in her workshop. We're sort of in a mountain of paper bags there trying to sort through them, but it was cool. It was cool. She was a big fan of the paper bag, it seems it allows the plant still to breathe a little bit and dry out, and it protects them a bit. So that's what she said. She recommended, rather than putting paper bags over a flower, say if it's still in the garden and you're still wanting it to ripen as or mature as much as it can, she recommends putting muslin over the flower head.
Muslin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Muslin.
Yeah. Cheesecloth. Yeah.
Yes.
Or you can get those little cloth bags. Cotton ones.
And just then that will keep the seeds,
instead of all the plastic. I know these ones that I have here are in plastic because I don't know.
Oh, that's the last phase. Once they're dried out or you've been through all the processing, then you can store them in an airtight like plastic bag or a jar or a tin or something like that. For the smaller seeds, so you've got, let's think of a small seed. You know, like a wheat type seed. Mm-hmm. Parsnip's a tiny one. Carrot seeds.
Oh, they're tiny.
Those tiny, seeds. She, so what we did was we put the whole flower head in a paper bag. Then we got a roller and rolled the paper bag. And that dispersed all the roughage and everything from around the seed and released just the seed. And then we just pick out all the bits. And then there was another thing after that. Honestly, it was quite interesting. It's called winnowing. Have you heard of that word?
Yes, with a fan.
You're such a librarian, Selena. She is, by the way, one of her trades. It's like a flat basket. Like looks like a plate, but it's made out of like flax or whatever. Yep. It's woven. And you just kind of gently shake the thing from side to side and almost like bump it a little bit. It's hard to explain. It's a very specific process. But, imagine someone sort of shaking something side to side and up and down sort of at the same time. And then what happens is the heavier seeds stay in there and all the roughage and everything kind of just flips out.
And then it sort of sieves down to, you get the seed.
And she also used sieves as well.
Right.
So she had all these.
Sounds fun.
It was. But it does require a bit of time.
I can imagine. On farms that save seeds, it's quite a process and quite a finicky one too.
Yep. It certainly came, especially with those smaller seeds. So, you need good sieves. And the sieves she was using, I've never seen before. I said to her, where do you get something like that from? And she goes, I don't know. They've just always been here. So, I think it's sort of an ancient art almost. The sieves were flat in the size of dinner plates.
Okay.
I guess I'm sure if you Google it, you'd be able to find it somewhere. But that's what she had a variety of sieve sizes, mesh sizes as well.
Oh, wow. If you want to do it commercially, I guess you'd need all that equipment.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But for the home gardener, the flowers going to seed, fruits going to seed.
Yeah, you don't need huge amounts of seed. No. I mean, she's really an avid permaculturalist here. Yeah. I mean, she goes for it.
Wow,
so very interesting and really hands-on. Great time.
I had these ones, Karen, they're from the loquat tree.
Oh.
So you eat them and they've got really big seeds.
Yes, I can see that. It's like almost the size of a marble.
I don't know why I saved them because apparently loquat is a weed.
Okay.
The Auckland Council has classified it
as one
of the weeds for Auckland region.
Hmm.
But the fruits are so yummy.
Okay, have you given me that before to try? I think maybe you have.
They're little yellow.
They're yellow,
Yeah, like a 50 cent piece, maybe a bit bigger. They're juicy. Birds love them, and apparently the birds love them so much that when they eat them, they poo the seeds out and they start growing. And because loquat loves Auckland climate, it just grows, it's become a nuisance.
Well, yeah. It sounds like a great nuisance to me if it's yummy. Well, is it like a really sweet fruit?
Yeah, the birds like it. It's kind of like not too tart, but sweet tart.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Kind of like sweetened rhubarb, maybe.
A bit more sweeter than rhubarb. Okay. Yeah, kind of.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, next time you see some, please keep some aside for me. Pretty please?
Okay. We've had peaches this season and they have been bigger. Well, last season I didn't have any, but this season I do, but the fruits aren't very big.
Oh, I've never had luck with my peach tree either. The tree's growing gloriously and I've saved it a few times from fungal diseases and it's doing really well. But the fruit, what is going on with that?
I don't know. I think maybe it doesn't like the Auckland climate.
I'm wondering that it needs
to be a bit cooler.
Cooler and drier?
Yeah. Down in the South Island, the stone fruits do really well. But up here in Auckland, you're kind of marginal.
Well, I'm glad it's not just me then, in that sense. I'm sad that you didn't get the fruit, but it's like, oh, okay. So you're not on your own, Selena.
No.
It's like, we're like, oh, they're coming to fruit, and then they'll sort of just turn green and split.
Yes. we're not failures. We're just living in the wrong location.
Yeah. And the tree's lovely, so, yeah.
All right, now it's time for Plants of the Week.
I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion patch.
An onion patch.
Yes, an onion.
Our Plant of the Week, one of our listeners, Louise, has asked us about lemon verbena.
Ooh.
She wants to know, she's been given one in a pot. And her garden's quite small, so she wants to know how big does it get? And I know, Karen, that you do have this plant in your garden.
I do. It's only just started taking off, though, Selena, so I'm not sure how big it's going to get, but I do know that it is a shrub.
Yes.
Am I right on that?
I did some research.
It certainly looks like one. But it's not. It's still got a wee way to go. It's taken a while.
Well, according to my research, the lemon verbena grows to up to 2 to 3 metres tall and 1.5 metres wide.
Okay, that sounds...
Yeah.
Mine's about a metre tall at the moment.
Yeah.
And certainly not that wide, but yeah.
Yeah. But you can keep it pruned back because lemon verbena does an odd thing in... winter. What does it do, Karen?
It looks pretty much dead. It goes into severe hibernation.
Okay.
I've almost pulled that thing out. It was a slow starter. I don't think I chose the best spot, in all fairness. But, that's actually what they do. And then they suddenly, I think, come spring... just go for it. And that lemon scent just, oh my goodness, it would have to be my favourite lemon plant out of all of them. Yeah, it is just glorious. Did you enjoy, I gave you some lemon verbena.
Yes, it smelled divine.
Did you try it in a tea?
I haven't tried it yet.
Okay.
So you can dry it and just make it up as a tea.
Yeah, and it makes a really nice lemony tea. Yeah.
Yes, because there are other lemony plants out there. Well, the lemon tree. There's lemon... So there's lemon tree, or the citrus.
Mm-hmm.
There's lemon balm.
Mm-hmm.
There's lemon grass.
Yep.
And lemon myrtle.
Mm.
Or even lemon wood, which is a shrub, a native shrub that smells kind of like lemons.
Okay.
But apparently lemon verbena is the best herb to get that lemon scent and flavour.
Oh, lovely.
Because...
I'd totally back that up. It's my favourite. There's just something really... It's just a really nice, well-balanced... Yeah. It's a shame it doesn't have the fruit to go with it, but yeah.
It's apparently from the temperate South America.
Oh, right.
So that's where it's originally from.
Yeah.
It likes a bit of shelter. And as you say, it does die down in winter, but you can cut it back to about 15 centimetres and then it'll come back in spring. Yeah.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry too much about it getting huge because it'll you can cut it down.
It's a totally manageable plant.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's an essential for an urban garden, that one. Definitely.
And
a lemon tree as well.
You can keep it in your pot if you want, but it might like, depending on your soil, to be planted out, but it's up to you. The frosts, it doesn't like the frost that much.
Mm, no.
So in a sheltered spot would be good.
I think it will bounce back, depending on how severe the frost is.
Yeah.
But you could risk it.
Okay.
Yeah. Dying completely if you planted it down south. I think, yeah, Louise, I'm assuming, is from the north.
Yep, she's out west like us.
Right, got it, perfect.
So there you go, Louise, it's lemon verbena. And I researched some recipes for lemon verbena. You can make a syrup out of it and flavour whatever you want to flavour. So just have sugar and water and boil it up and make it into a cordial. You can use the leaves to flavour your cakes. Just spread the leaves.
Yes, I've heard of people doing that. Makes a delicious cake.
Yeah, under your cake batter. Like, you don't put it in the batter, but lining the pan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's another use. And here's a recipe. I won't read out the recipe, but a suggestion. You can use it, chicken breasts with lemon verbena. You can use it in a marinade. Just chop up the leaves and marinate your chicken and lemon verbena.
Oh, nice. So there you go.
So, I mean,
it is flourishing. There's some great uses for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you do have a lot of success with it, just snip it and dry it. Hang it up and then you've got some for the winter.
I'd like a cutting if I could, Karen.
No worries, Selena. I'll check on it when I get home for you.
Good. So that's our plant of the week. Now, Karen, coming this weekend, do we have any garden parties to go to?
I heard about one on the 17th, Selena. What's going on there?
Okay, this one is a garden concert at Alberton. You know Alberton?
No.
Mount Albert?
I know Mount Albert.
Yeah,
okay.
It's this old historic home on Mount Albert, Great North Road.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a huge, like an English-type garden.
Oh, lovely.
It's a very old home. And the Aotea Youth Symphony are having an open-air concert there in the garden.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Yeah, so it's this Sunday, 11 to 3. I think there's no entry fee. You can just go along.
Oh, just bring your teacup and you're good to go.
Yeah. So that sounds like fun. So if you're into going to a garden party, that's one that's on this weekend.
And it's free, you say?
Yes, I assume so.
Okay. I don't think it... that's it for the calendar this weekend?
Yeah, there's one on next weekend that maybe give you a heads up. It's not... It's more of a... So Linda Hallinan, you know Linda Hallinan, the editor of the New Zealand Gardener? She's opening up her garden for the weekend.
Oh, right. I can imagine that'll be worth looking at.
Yes, down in Hinua, her garden's called Foggy Dale Farm. It's actually a farm.
Wow.
And she's made it into garden and she's got it all working and offering like high tea and cuttings for sale and everything.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see you
there. So where's that, Hinua?
Yep, in the Hinua Ranges. You could Google where exactly she's having it on her website. The Foggy Dale Farm. Just Google it and, yeah.
Okay, awesome. Thanks.
Well, that's all we've got time for, Karen. I really enjoyed talking about saving seeds and all that jazz. So.
Oh, awesome. So did I, Selena. It was a very enjoyable workshop.
Yeah, so that's Garden Planet for this week. Email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you have any questions or you'd like to invite us to your garden parties. Happy gardening, everyone.
See you later. Bye.